Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Guzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermenting.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome to Foment About It, episode 147.
147. 47 is the most common number in the universe, so says my high school math teacher. We live at 47. All sorts of things happen at 47. I'm excited to get to 47. But you know what I'm also excited about? Last week's episode. That was really fun having Jeff Cioletti in town. He's the author of The Year of Drinking Adventurously. I plan to drink adventurously this year and get out of my safe zone of beer. Although I'm not bored of it. I could stay here happily forever, I think. Are there any announcements you'd like to make, Mary?
Yes, but I just realized that I put the announcements on the sheet and didn't write down the specifics. So, you with the computer?
Oh, that's me.
So Brew for Autism, if you're in New York City, Brew for Autism is an event that is occurring on January 30th. On Staten Island. It's a great opportunity to drink homebrew and commercial beer for a great cause. It will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Tickets are still available. They also have great raffle prizes as well. And if you just Google Brew for Autism, you will find the information.
That's right. That very same day, I will be up at Defiant Brewing Company for the Abominable Beer Fest, which should be pretty fun. They conflict, but if you can make it to both, that'd be awesome.
And then, oh, here we go. Saturday, February 20th, Josh Bernstein is once again holding his annual homebrew jamboree from noon to 2 p.m. And let me see if I don't know if there are tickets still available, but that's a really cool opportunity to taste awesome homebrew as well. Oh, man, it's sold out. So.
And it's sold out. But that's okay, because the week after that, Josh and I are putting together a festival. The second year we're doing it, called the Winter's Grind, featuring all winter beers and sausages from local purveyors at Tyson Ho's Arrogant Swine. And it will feature 10 homebrewers and 15 pro brewers.
Awesome. That was a great event last year.
I'm excited to take it to round two.
I think that's all the announcements I have. I didn't do much fermenting this week. I bought fresh turmeric root to do a turmeric tonic. I'm still debating how I want to do it. I don't know if I want to do it like a ginger bug or do a more traditional or a different kind of whey ferment.
What would you do as a ginger bug?
Just make it exactly like ginger bug. So
what is ginger bug?
Sliced up root, ginger root or turmeric root. I believe you can also use... I never know how to say this. Galangal root? Anybody?
Nope.
Oh, man. I am the queen of mispronunciation.
Galangal works.
And then some kind of sugar source. So usually people put a little bit of lemon or lime in it. And then you put it in a room temperature or above area. And it will basically create a lacto-fermentation. I've never tried it with... I've done it a bunch of times with ginger. And I've never tried it with turmeric. So I might try that. So that's on the slate for fermentations.
What'd you say of turmeric the other day? There was a fact that you busted out. Is it like the most nutritious root?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a superfood because it has another... I'm totally blanking. I don't have a computer in front of me, but...
You do. It's just a very slow...
I know. It's actually used as a... it's like an ibuprofen. It's like a naturopathic ibuprofen.
And they're also doing a bunch of studies with cancer prevention or treatment. Yeah. I was trying to think of the main chemical. It's like curcumin or something. Anyway.
Thanks, man. We have a ton of info.
You're human.
There you go. But
anyway,
today's episode.
I also have a kohlrabi. I'm going to make a kohlrabi kimchi.
How do you spell kohlrabi?
Kohlrabi.
Who eats the most kohlrabi? The Germans.
I don't know if that's true, but it is a European
the other day.
It's a European root vegetable. All right. Back to the show.
I'm very excited about today's show. I've been excited about this for a long time. There is a device out there that is pretty damn awesome. I'm not going to go into too much of what it is until we talk to our guest, Annie Johnson.
So Annie Johnson, if you've never heard of her, she is a master brewer for Pico Brew, national BJCP judge, and 2013 AHA Home Brewer of the Year. Are you on, Annie?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So where are you? You're in California. You're on West Coast somewhere, right?
I am in sunny Seattle, which is supposed to be really funny because it's not sunny.
I bet it's warmer there than it is here, though.
It's 47, so it's raining.
Yeah. We're sitting at 24 right now. 23.
Yep.
Quite a bit colder.
In an unheated shipping container in the back of a pizza joint in Brooklyn, right? It's pretty damn cold. Right?
It's normally heated. The heater's a little bit on the fridge right now. It's not too bad, though. Anyway, so let's go back to the beginning. So when did you start homebrewing, and what got you started?
I started homebrewing in 1998. I used to work for a concert promoter, pretty well known. His name was Bill Graham. And we worked a reggae show every year, reggae on the river. And then when the show was over, we decompressed, and I was in Fort Bragg, California, because the show was up in the Redwoods near there. And then I saw a homebrew kit in the window, and I thought, it's my best friend's birthday. I just got paid. I have all this money. We have a beer. So I bought the kit, and then we started brewing on the weekends, mainly during football season. And then my friends would retreat to the couch and watch the games, and then I was spending more and more time in the kitchen. And since we're big baseball and football fans, we named all our beers after Oakland A's and Oakland Raiders players. So we had Raleigh Red and Tim Brown Ale, and we had a Catfish Hunter IPA.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it just stuck with me. And then they moved. My friend got a job transfer to Delaware, and she took everything with her. And then about 6 weeks after she moved, I got all the brewing equipment and then a big box of Dogfish Head beer.
Very nice.
I'd never heard of Dogfish Head, and then, and I just started brewing. I thought, this is really cool stuff. And just experimenting with flavors, and then I got bit by the bug, and I started having a lot of competitions and what they used to call ribbon whore. I had to get validation all the time. I had to have more and more, but that's how it started, and it just kind of took off from there. And then I really started to fall in love with just brewing, and it was just a great way for me to escape on the weekend from work and family and all that. I know I talk too much. You're gonna have to cut me.
No, great. This is great. Yeah,
it's too cold for us to talk too much here. So as a ribbon horde. You
brew. Not whore with it. Not horde.
Oh,
I
was trying to keep it. I was trying to keep it PC. Just hoarding ribbons. I dig that. however you want to approach it. But in order to do that, you had to brew to style. Did you start from a stylistic, or was that a main focus of yours?
Well, yeah. I in the beginning, it was just kits that I would get at the local shop, and then I would venture off, but if you think about the years being 99, 2000, there wasn't a whole lot out there on the internet. And then the books that I could get, I usually stuck to George Fix's book, and there was a Dave Line had his great one from Brewing Great Beer, or Beers of the World. So I had those, and then I was encouraged to judge. And then I'm lucky, at the time I was so lucky because there's this great core group of judges from Sacramento area, Beth Sangari, David Tecum, Jimmy Olzanischef, Dave Sapsis. So they were all friends of mine, and they encouraged me to brew or to take the BJCP. And then from there, I just started breaking down all the, from the guidelines, breaking down the styles and mastering each one, and so I would spend you know, about a year on each style, except when I got to the Belgians, I spent 3 years brewing nothing but Belgians, and, you know, and then honing other recipes, and, like, you know, Czech Pilsners, I probably spent, you know, doing the other styles, I still did about 5 years just on mashing. So being a beer judge, learning about the styles, judging competitions, and brewing, you know, really helped, that helped me evolve as a, you know, as a home brewer. It just, it gave me everything that I needed. And then I took some classes at UC Davis Fermentation Science Program too, but nothing helped me more than brewing and then using the guidelines.
That's awesome. So you are a national beer judge. Do you still judge?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I do.
I can't judge as much as I used to. I mean, I, you know, but I still judge a good, oh, maybe 12 times a year.
That's fantastic. Off topic or together. Oh, go ahead, Mary.
I want to know what you think of the new guidelines. I am also a national beer judge, so I'm always curious to hear from somebody else.
There's a lot. I do like that they broke up the Czech beers to have their own thing. But other than that, I'm thinking I'll probably never take the exam ever again. There's no way I'm going to be able to cram all that in my head.
I know,
it's hard
I agree.
Enough as it is now because I'm thinking, well, maybe it's time for me to, you know, I have so many experience points in all these, you know, judging exams and or grading exams and proctoring. There's just no way. There's just too much. It's too much.
Yeah,
and you know, I need to get out and try some of these newer styles. I think I've been drinking them all along. You know, there's white IPA, black IPA, red IPA, you know, chartreuse IPA. There's all these different ones. It's a bit much because at the core it needs to be an IPA. So I'm not going to say I hate them, but I'm not. I like them, but I'm not in love with them yet.
Right.
Yeah, I think
we're still dating.
Right.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think it's going to be
the same with you.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity because I brew mostly not to style or kind of oddball beverages. So I haven't been entering competitions because my beers don't really fit in or non beers. And so I think it's a good opportunity for people that like me that do brew more non traditionally. I think it's also going to be easier in some ways for judges. Because going in, you know, it was a little difficult if you're for those, you know, the old kind of specialty beer categories, you're judging, you know, apples to oranges. So I think, you know, breaking it in, some of these categories being broken down are going to make it a little easier on the judges. I think it's a lot harder on judge coordinators and competition organizers.
Yeah, that's what I'm
at least for now. But I think overall it's the right thing. I mean, people are brewing all over the place. I mean, all kinds of styles.
All over the map. And I'm old school, but I've had, in the last 3 years, I've branched out where I've done things that are, you know, not traditional. But for the most part, I wouldn't say I'm by the book, but I think it's because of just from doing it for so long that I'm like an old curmudgeon, get off my lawn, give me my Cascade Centennial, and move along. You know,
yeah.
I really am going outside like I know that you do. I've read some of your things online. I know you have an awesome book, and it's you know I'm trying, and then I try other people's beer. So I find that I like it, but as far as the guidelines go, it's just. I have a copy, and it's overwhelming.
Yes, that is true. I think it's going to take a while for everybody to adjust, but I think it has a lot of pluses, and I think you know, and especially if you compare it to the Brewers Association guidelines, like you know,
what is it? It's huge.
Yeah, if they can deal with it, us homebrewers can deal with it too.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good, really good point.
So we're going to go to break in a minute, but I just want to ask, so you were the recipient of the 2013 AHA Homebrewer of the Year. Chris and I were at that banquet.
Yes.
So that was awesome. What was that like to win that? I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but we have to ask
it
again.
It was great. It's still one of them. It's huge, and especially with the beer that won was an American Light Lager, which is that. you know, that unloved stepchild here. And it was really nice to be recognized. I had a ticket. I had hotel. I had, you know, my plane ticket, and I just changed my mind at the last minute because my father was so sick. And I knew if something happened, I would, you know, I wouldn't. The chances of winning are so small that I thought, nah, I can't go. And I'm glad that I stayed because it was a good thing. So when I got the news, I couldn't believe it. I got a text that said, oh, you won. I thought, cool, what did I get? Second, third? First, they go, no, you won it. You're the Homebrew of the Year. You're kidding me. That's not, no way. There's no way.
Yeah,
never think about it. Then I started to think about it. I thought, boy, I know Philly in the summer because I have family there, and I taught. And homebrewers, judges, they've been there for days drinking all that beer. Maybe all they wanted was who I loved. Same time for judging, so maybe that was.
But I think also, I mean, that is a notoriously very difficult style to brew. That is not a beer that any kind of
beginner. It was hard.
Yeah, so I think
it remains one of the hardest beers.
Yeah, definitely. And I think more judges recognize that now, maybe, people recognize that that's a notoriously difficult style to brew. So,
well, you can't just make a light gravity beer. I mean, it doesn't have to have that lower gravity, but you have to have flavor. And then there was this terrific article I've been holding on for a couple of years that Betsy Parks wrote for BYO magazine. And I thought, you know, I always read that magazine. I always file these recipes that I want to do in the back of my head. And I had that one. I thought, well, I'm going to tackle that one. And so that's when I did it. And it was at a time in my life where I had an illness, and it was undiagnosed. And I squeaked out two beers. It was that one and a Czech Pilsner that did really well in the competition. I was so happy that I could have the strength to put them out. But that article, you know, it's about reading, too, and I got my philosophy about reading in brewing is it was a terrific article, and I just followed the instructions, and I just nailed it. And it was, but it was technically, it was very, very, it was difficult. It was a really hard one. It took a lot out of me.
It paid off in the end.
But that one was hard.
Awesome.
And on that note, we're going to be right back after this short break.
Forget about it.
International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to episode 147 of Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are on the phone with Annie Johnson, Master Brewer for Pico Brew, National BJCP Judge, and 2013 AHA Home Brewer of the Year. Let's talk about Pico Brew. What is Pico Brew?
Pico Brew is a startup here in Seattle, which is makes automated brewing equipment. So we have three products now. We have the Zymatic, which is our flagship brewing equipment, and then the Pico, which is our latest one, and then we also have controlled fermentation with KegSmart.
What is the difference between the Zymatic and the Pico?
Now, is the Pico out yet, or are people pre-ordering it?
People are pre-ordering the Pico right now, and we'll be shipping it in the beginning of April.
Awesome.
And the Zymatic is a, you can do multi-step mashing. It's an all-grain brewing machine, and it's capable of producing, I'd say, just under 3 gallons of beer. And then the Pico itself uses prepackaged Pico packs, and that's geared more towards the craft beer enthusiast. So we've partnered with breweries who've licensed their recipe to us.
Ooh, that's
and
awesome.
We've scaled those up. You need to get in on it because we have a master brewer series. You know, people like Drew Beecham, Danny Kahn, and some other notable master homebrewers are in on that series. We would love to have one from you. From
that would be awesome.
That'd be fun.
Totally.
Yeah, so I'll email you. We'll talk about that. I also have a Celeste Speedy from Harlem Brewing. Doing one.
Oh, she's great.
Very cool.
And then larger breweries like 21st Amendment and Rogue and Abita, they're also getting in on. What we're doing with that one is really democratizing beer. So it's anybody, anywhere in the world who has this Pico just gets the pack, puts it in, and it does the brewing for them. So it's cool.
It also doubles as a sous vide machine.
Yes, if you're in the cooking, that's one feature of both the Zymatic and the Pico is that you can do sous vide, which we do every Wednesday at Pico Brew because we have about 15 interns that are starving. they go to University of Washington, so we feed them every Wednesday. We do vegetables, we do shrimp, we do pork tenderloin, skirt steak.
We just got
potatoes,
my...
You name it.
Yeah, Chris got me in at Nova... sous vide stick for Christmas, so I'm a huge. I think that's super cool that I didn't realize that the Zymatic. We have several friends that have Zymatics, and they all love them. But I didn't realize that they both the Zymatic and the Pico can double as a sous vide machine. So that's a really cool.
Yeah, well, we love food at Pico Brew, so there's no way we could have one do it, not the other.
Yeah. Now you said the Pico makes how much liquid?
The Pico does five liters.
Okay.
Of finished beer, yeah.
Which is
and
about
then the packs they use. They started, their estimated cost will be about $15 to $30, and they're compostable.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's very important for us to make sure that we have those compostable packs.
And then the five liters is what, just under 2 gallons? Is that?
Yeah, no, it's like 1.2, so it's just under, it's just about 16 pints.
And how are you guys recommending, just out of curiosity, how are you guys recommending that people package their... The peak from the Pico.
Oh well, if you have a Pico, you'll go to picobrew.com and we have a brew marketplace. And this is the place where all the breweries have all the beautiful pictures of their beer. They talk about the beer, and you can go through and read about breweries and select the beer and the pack that you want. It's kind of like a shopping. So you just look at all these, you can pick by style of beer. Or just by a brewery that you know. And these breweries are predominantly U.S. and Canada, but we have some from all over the world, from Italy and Chile and South Korea and Australia. So you just pick the beer that you want, and then the Pico pack, and then we ship it to you. It gets made up fresh.
As somebody that's been very hands-on with brewing from the beginning, what was it? What brought you to Pico Brew, and what do you like it about it as a home brewer?
What
is your job?
Pico Brew, is that what you said?
What's that?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
As somebody who has been hands-on, you've been hands-on home brewing for up until getting involved with Pico Brew. When did you get involved with Pico Brew?
Well, I had won Homebrew of the Year, and then it was a few months after that, I was on a plane, and I saw and I never read the paper on the plane, and I was actually traveling to go see my father, and he was I know he's getting ready to die, so I was in a weird state. I picked up a paper and I read about it, and I thought, what is this robot? And who are these people holding up pint glasses, cheering each other? They're all skinny. No brewer is that fan. So I was down and I was talking with my brother, and I showed him the article, and he's like, you should write him a letter and you should tell him who you are. I'm like, yeah, okay, because that's not my stuff at all. So I wrote a letter and I said, I read about you, and I'd love to see the device. And then, by the way, I won Homebrew of the Year, and I'm a peer judge. So they invited me in. They wrote me back within a couple hours, and Bill Mitchell did. And then I went a couple weeks later, and they had a nice lunch for me that they cooked sous vide. And it was my first experience with that. Awesome. And then they gave me this terrific tour, and I tasted the beer, and I was so prepared to, get down on its case, pretty much. And I couldn't, because the one thing that struck me was the absence of off flavors that you find typical with a lot of,
right,
home brewing. Not so much anymore, but you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Diacetyl and,
absolutely.
And DMS and some other things. But there was none of that, and it was from one of their lab techs who had never brewed before in her whole life. She'd just been there working 6 months as an intern. I thought, this is interesting, because I was trying IPAs, double IPAs. I was trying dark American lagers and Baltic Port. I was trying all these styles because she was just nabbing anything she could find on the internet. And so I told him, I said, that's pretty good, but don't take my word for it. You should put it in a competition. Get it out there and get some blind panel tasting. So I got an email a couple weeks after that inviting me back. There was a sous vide device in Seattle, it was called the Sansaire or something. No, that's a wine, but
there is one that has a name like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they invited me in to meet those guys because they're from Seattle too. And then Bill gave me a key to the building and said, we really need some recipes. Would you be interested in helping out? And we'll give you some money. Or we'll give you a Zymatic. I thought, because I really wanted the money. I said, okay. And then it was probably 2 weeks after that that he said, would you ever consider working here? And I had worked 20 years for the California State Legislature as a business analyst, and I thought, okay, this is my chance to turn a hobby into a career. Yeah. And I have 20 years in with this other job that I was starting to get really probably a little too, I don't know what the word is, I was disgruntled, or not disgruntled, but just bitchy, getting older.
Sure.
And over. So I said, yeah. So I've been there ever since, and it's been wonderful. I was employee number 11, and we have 35 now.
That's awesome. Fantastic. And so what
is really good. It's a really good place, and I always want people to come, and if they're in Seattle, to come see it, because there was this amount of backlash from homebrewers because it's, they don't want the automation, the robot in their basement or whatever. But trying to get the word out and talking to them and showing them the device and the passion that goes behind it and inviting converting people's way of thinking, like Denny Kahn was. No,
yes,
way.
Right.
Not doing it. And
right.
Now he has one,
yep.
And Drew has one, and they love it.
Yeah.
And same with John Mayer, Rogue. And he came by because Danny told him to come see it. And then he out of the blue, I get an email that says, we are loving our Zymatic. They have one at home. But how he knows it's not, I haven't brewed that way and ever in 30 years. But it's just a different way. And if people could just, some people just realize, if it gets more people in the hobby, then it's good for everyone. We're all getting more beer. Homebrew shops win because you buy more things. So it just is this great thing, and the older people are getting back into it who can't lift because of the Zymatic, you really don't have to lift.
Which is great. You know? I actually brewed 5 gallons yesterday, and I scorched my stomach moving my my kettle because I mash in the oven and I had to move it on top of the burner and I had a hard time.
It's not taking away, it's just adding to. It's a philosophy a friend of mine has in life. Is don't be somebody who takes away. Be an add to. And it just adds to the hobby and it has, for what I think it can be used for, there's 500 things I haven't thought of. I've got users in wheelchairs.
Yep.
We have people that have rheumatoid arthritis, people that live in cities like New York that don't have balconies or garages, backyards. These are all these things that, you know, things I used to take for granted.
Yeah,
always having space that now I'm thinking, well, this isn't for everybody. And it's not supposed to be for everybody, but it really can be for some people and be a great tool. And then the multi-step mashing is just a bonus. And, of course, Suvi, we were talking about it.
Absolutely.
And I don't
know if people have been to some of these large commercial breweries, but those are not too different. Those are very, you know, there's some push-button commercial systems. If you're doing something that you
totally
love
automated.
And making delicious...
This is probably one of the most beautifully automated breweries in the country.
Absolutely.
So what is the level of automation on a Pico brew? What is a typical brew day? Like, is it push play?
It is about typical brew days, 3.5 hours. And it's been designed so the, you know, it's a recirculating mash. And then once you cool down the wort, which you can do, you can hook up an immersion chiller, run the wort through it, put that in a bucket of ice. Or we have people that use plate chillers. Or you can do the easiest way is to chill overnight because it's a smaller volume and it really does cool overnight. And then you pitch the yeast the next day because it ferments in the keg itself. And then the dip tube is cut short by a half inch so you can pump out the beer. So you have this nice closed system.
Which is great.
And then I got to get you a loaner unit. Would you like one for the show? You can brew while you
talk. Absolutely.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And it's terrific, Mary, because, you know, like I said, I only in the last few years have been branching out, but things that I put now into the hop compartments, on my walk to work, I'll grab some fresh rosemary from someone's yard. I brew with lilac blossoms. You know, anything that you can think of, hibiscus flowers, all these different things that you can put inside of the cages work so well because it really has this fine filtering system so you get this beautifully crystal clear wort. And one of our biggest champions was White Labs. Took a prototype in the June of 2013 and they use it in their lab. One of their fellows there, Karen Fortman, uses it all the time. She calls it her baby Z. So you know,
that's
people
awesome.
Thinking outside and not being hurt because it's different from maybe a three-tiered system or something. It's just a new way of thinking. And the best beer, you know, those kinds of beers is from people that are thinking about, how can I get the best product? How can I get this? And then with Designmatic, it's this automation and consistency that you get the same thing over and over and over. Or if you make a beer, you send me the recipe. You know, I get it online. He says, I have it. I can make it. And I go, I know what you're talking about. It's so good.
Right.
Yeah.
And so.
And the Zymatic still gives you full control over what, you know, malt bill, your hop additions, like you said, any spices or flower or herbal additions.
Mm-hmm. We have it. And it's because it's automated. When you load it and you push the button, you don't have to babysit it. You can watch it on your a tablet or a smartphone, you can see the progression of the mash graph going and as it goes along. And then when it's done brewing, it sounds an alarm. It's a small beep. And it asks you, okay, I'm done. Do you want to hook up your chiller now or do you just want to end your brew cycle? And then you can do a pre-program rinse or a deep cleaning and everything cleans up in the dishwasher as well. So we've got a lot of satisfied people around the world that are brewing, which is nice.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the Pico, so the Pico comes with a keg that people can dispense from, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Pico comes all-inclusive, as does the Zymatic. The Zymatic comes with the brewing keg. And the Pico comes with the brewing keg and the serving keg. And we get all the transfer equipment. And we pride ourselves at Pico Brew. We have such good customer service. And we have problems, like, you know, any company. But we have really good, you know, customer service 7 days a week. It's always someone answering, and people, it's easy that we have a customer service manager who used to own a homebrew shop, and then myself and one other guy. So you're getting not only product support, you're getting any kind of brewing help. So it's really cool. You know, it's nice that we can provide that, and that's, people really like that.
Oh yeah, definitely. We have a friend who actually owns a commercial meadery in New Jersey. So he had to change the law in New Jersey so he could open this commercial meadery. And he's so busy in the meadery, but he wanted a homebrew. So he just bought one for his home. I think he has it in the meadery, actually. And he's really been enjoying it. He's been posting on Facebook.
This is Sergio Matuela.
Yeah, everybody
that we know that has one loves it.
I love it for prototyping.
But how many recipes have you put out in your time there?
I've put out 185.
Wow.
And I know. And these are recipes. Some of them are ones that I had and then I adapted to the Zymatic. And then others I created new. And then brewing them no less than six times with both the dry yeast and then also White Labs and Y yeast. So each recipe before it goes into our library. In the beginning, the first 80 was brewed about probably close to 12 times, between 12 and 16. And then now I brew them much less, like 3, since I know the machine so well. But I want to be able to tell people what the different yeasts will do to the base recipe. So
yeah, definitely.
You know, yeah, that's nice to, because, well, what's the difference if I use US05 and, you know, or I use California Ale or I use 1056 from my yeast? I was like, well, this is what you get with this and that and that.
Yeah, nice. I will also make a note. So we actually, the homebrewer of the year last year went to 3 of our friends here in New York City that are sour brewers. And Oscar Norlander, which is one of the 3, he and his girlfriend actually did the Kickstarter. So they have both a Zymatic and the Keg Smart, and they love it. So,
oh, good. You know, I had gone out to New York in the summertime, and
that's right. I went to
Bitter, and after they had a nice little event. That's a nice thing too. Is that we'll go out anywhere anybody invites us will show up. But and Oscar, he's a really cool guy.
Yeah,
it was so cool
nice.
That they won.
Yeah,
because I chatted with them at NHC in San Diego, and before, you know, the award ceremony. So when they won, I thought, I know them.
Yeah.
And it turns out one of the nice fellow, his name escapes me, who was at Brooklyn Brewery. He and I are from. He's from Sacramento too. So it was unique. Nice guys, all of them. Really cool that they won.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and well deserved. We've been drinking their beer for years. So real
Anna
quick,
Anna Goose. I love that.
Yes,
that they won with that.
They have a magic barrel that they have cultivated. So really quick, we have to go shortly, but I just want to ask, what's one of your favorite, or I kind of hate the favorite question, but what's one of your favorite or a couple of your favorite recipes that you've developed for Pico Brew recently, or what beers?
Oh, it's a really hard question.
I know.
I'm a huge fan of making red ales. I've always loved red ales. And then making Czech Pilsners. I have I'm a terrible namer of beers, but, you know, I have those. But, if you ever want any recipes, I'd be more than happy to give you any of the recipes.
Awesome.
Anything that you like, you know, my own stuff that I make at home. But I still have a 20-ounce system at home that I brew on every couple of months. Because we're really getting fat at home because I got beer at work and I got beer at home.
Yes.
Double lard. I'll name my next IPA Double Lard. That's how bad I am at naming beers.
Fantastic.
I don't know. I think that's a pretty good name. All right. We have to wrap it up, but thank you so much for being on the show. Hopefully we'll see you I think you're going to CBC.
Yeah, we'll be there with our Pico, our H fam. We have a 73 Citron H fam, which is the sides flap up and they pull up the neon sign, and it's a pretty cool thing. And then we'll be in Baltimore.
Awesome. We'll and we'll definitely there. Be there as well. Absolutely. So we look forward to meeting you in person. And thank you so much for being on. And we hope we ran out of time to talk about everything, but hopefully we'll have you on in the future as well.
Anything.
You know what? And to Mary and Chris, it was really nice to talk with you. If any of your listeners ever want to get a Zymatic, please have them email me and I will extend my homebrewer discount, which is a really nice discount.
What is your email address?
It is, I'll give you attention, Annie, and it's info@picobrew.com. And tell them that you heard me on your great show from then about it. And I will hook them up.
Awesome. And anybody out there who has not heard of the Pico Brew and wants to know more about it, you can go to picobrew.com. That's PICOBREW.com. Right. Thanks again, Annie. We'll see you soon.
You're awesome. Thank you.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. From then about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.